You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Earlier this week, Governor Snyder submitted a waiver to the federal government, which asked for permission to impose work requirements on people who get their health insurance through Healthy Michigan. Meanwhile, a lawsuit recently argued before a federal judge in a Texas courtroom threatens the future of the Affordable Care Act. Here with us to break it all down is Nicholas Bagley, a professor at the University of Michigan Law School, where he specializes in health and administrative law. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to first start by getting your thoughts on Medicaid work requirements, because this week Governor Snyder submitted a waiver to require people on Healthy Michigan to work for their health insurance benefits. He said it's necessary to keep Healthy Michigan going because the way the law is written, there's this poison pill that if the waiver isn't approved, Healthy Michigan is over. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so the Michigan legislature has insisted on stitching work requirements into the Medicaid program. And work requirements have some facial appeal, right? If you're going to be taking government money to cover your health insurance, you might as well work for it. Don't sit on your duff playing video games in the basement all day. The trouble with that story is that the vast majority of people on Medicaid already work. The few that don't work are actually taking care of dependent children, taking care of dependent adults, or they're sick themselves, or they're in school. So the number of people who might be induced to work is actually quite small. But the universe of people who have to document all of their hours is really large. And if you think about how complicated healthcare is, you know, a lot of people who are on Medicaid barely know they're on Medicaid, much less know how to comply with these work requirements. And so an awful lot of people are going to struggle simply to do the paperwork that's required to document that they're working. And the result of that is likely to be that maybe about 100,000 people, maybe more, in the state of Michigan will lose their health insurance. Some of those people will be working, but they just won't be able to deal with what I like to call paperwork requirements.
So what legal recourse is there if the governor's waiver is approved?
Well, right now there's a lawsuit pending in Washington, D.C., challenging similar work requirements for Kentucky's program. And a district court judge in D.C. said that work requirement waiver that was granted was unlawful. There will be almost certainly a similar lawsuit brought to any waiver granting Michigan's work requirements. Whether that lawsuit is successful remains to be seen. The state of Kentucky will certainly appeal to the D.C. Circuit, and from there, possibly even to the Supreme Court. So there's a long road ahead when it comes to the legality of work requirements. But for now, they're already rolling out in Arkansas, they're about to roll out in Kentucky, and they're likely to roll out here. And the result is that many thousands of people will lose their insurance coverage.
I want to move over to the lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act. It's before Judge Reed O'Connor of the Federal District Court for the Northern District of Texas. So briefly explain who brought this case and why.
There's a group of Republican attorneys general who decided to bring what you might think of as a rear guard, last ditch, constitutional challenge to the entirety of the Affordable Care Act.
But Michigan's not one of these.
Michigan's not one of them. Attorney General Schuette has been a relentless opponent of the Affordable Care Act from the beginning. This is the first time I've seen him sit one of these out.
What are they arguing?
The challenge arises from Congress's decision to eliminate the individual mandate penalty at the end of 2017 as part of tax reform. The individual mandate has obviously been very controversial, and Congress said, we don't need this.
And it was really a linchpin for the Affordable Care Act.
It was really a linchpin for the Affordable Care Act, and the Republican Congress said, look, even if it's a linchpin, it's too much of an incursion on individual liberty to be tolerable. So we're going to get rid of it. And whatever the consequences are, we'll roll with them. And maybe that'll be bad for the health insurance markets because fewer healthy people will enroll, which means that rates for everybody who remains will go up. But they thought those costs were worth bearing to get rid of the individual mandate. Now, the Republican state attorneys general say, actually, when you repealed the individual mandate penalty, you created a constitutional problem. And their argument is complicated, but their argument is that when the individual mandate was sustained by the Supreme Court back in 2012, it was sustained under Congress's power to impose taxes. Well, now that the tax has been zeroed out, they say the individual mandate, it cannot be justified as a constitutional matter. And they say that the instruction, the naked instruction, the unenforceable, penalty-free instruction to buy insurance, they say that's still on the books, and that's unconstitutional. Now, I can't get too worked up about this constitutional debate because who cares whether an instruction that is not backed up by any penalty is enforceable or not? It's the next move that the attorneys general make that's really the audacious one. They say, okay, look, because of this problem this perceived constitutional problem, which I don't think exists, but stipulate that it does, we think not only does the individual mandate that remains in place need to be struck out of the law, we think the entire statute has to fall. Why do we think that? Well, because back in 2010, Congress, when it passed the Affordable Care Act, said that the individual mandate was really important to the Act's proper functioning. And so they say, well, maybe when Congress repealed the individual mandate in 2017, if it had known that it was creating this constitutional problem, maybe it would have been of the same view. And maybe it would have preferred just to wipe out the entirety of the ACA. It's an audacious argument. It's, frankly, a frivolous argument, an argument that virtually no commentator across the political spectrum has endorsed. It is nonetheless an argument that this highly conservative judge that they purposefully filed in front of appears pretty sympathetic to.
I want to have you explain this to us. The case is Texas versus the United States.
Yes.
So the federal government is the defendant, but the Trump administration has sided with the plaintiffs in this individual mandate. What's going on here?
Yeah, this is one of the more, actually, I think the most troubling part of this lawsuit. You know, when the lawsuit was filed, I think responsible legal commentators said this is not a serious lawsuit. This is an effort on the part of Republican state attorneys general to burnish their credentials with their base. Every Republican state attorney general wants to be governor someday. To do that, you have to win a primary election. And so this is a political stunt. I thought at the time, actually, the bigger concern was that the Trump administration would then be forced to make a tough choice. Traditionally, the Justice Department defends acts of Congress. That's its job. And it's an important job. And it's one that the Justice Department takes very seriously because we don't want the executive branch to pick and choose the laws that it'll defend. All the laws that Congress passes ought to be enforced and upheld.
Given defense.
Exactly. So the Trump administration, in the normal course, would have defended this statute. But this is the Affordable Care Act. The political controversy surrounding health reform prompted them to change their tune. And instead of defending the lawsuit, they threw the law under the bus. And they said, we agree that the statute is unconstitutional. They don't think the entire ACA has to fall, but they think that some of its most important provisions have to go. Community rating, which means that insurers have to charge everybody, sick and healthy alike, the same rate, that would go away. The requirement of an insurer to sell you insurance if, say, you have a pre-existing condition, that would go away.
And people, they may not like the Affordable Care Act, but they like the pre-existing condition protection.
Well, a lot of people think of health reform and they think Obamacare. And so it's really a referendum on how you felt about the previous occupant of the White House or about Democrats. When you actually drill down on what the Affordable Care Act did, people tend to support it. They tend to say, oh, I like that part of it. And the parts they dislike, like the individual mandate, are essential to supporting and sustaining the parts of the Affordable Care Act they do like.
We've even seen a group of Republican lawmakers try to introduce something saying you've got to keep the protections for pre-existing conditions.
Absolutely. That legislation actually doesn't achieve the goal that they'd set out to do. But I think what's one of the really interesting things about watching this lawsuit is to get a sense of the kind of political shift that we're witnessing. When the lawsuit was filed, I think these Republican state attorneys general thought that Republican policymakers would have their backs. But Republican members of Congress are lining up to walk away from this lawsuit. And in fact, in some really closely contested Senate races, Senate Democrats who are facing really tough campaigns are running on their opponents' support for this lawsuit. Joe Manchin in West Virginia just put out a wonderful advertisement where he actually takes a gun and shoots a copy of this lawsuit, saying that my opponent supports taking protections for pre-existing conditions away from people. So if this is a live issue and Democrats are finally starting to say, you know what, we believe in the Affordable Care Act. We think health reform is a winning issue for us. I think we're witnessing something very important shift in the political conversation.
But if Judge O'Connor rules, and you say he's very conservative, hey, you 20 attorneys general, you are right, and that in the individual mandate is unconstitutional, where does that leave us? Then what happens?
Well, I think it's likely he will, judging from the questions that he asked at a hearing last week. What exactly he does is, you know, he has a couple of different choices available to him. In all likelihood, whatever the judge does, it'll be immediately appealed. Any injunction that he might enter prohibiting the enforcement of the health reform law is likely to be put on hold pending appeal. I don't think we're likely to witness the end of the Affordable Care Act whenever the judge happens to issue his order. A stay will be entered either by the Fifth Circuit or by, if necessary, the Supreme Court. I also don't think on appeal the courts are going to have any patience with this lawsuit. Whatever this hard right judge in Texas might think about the arguments on display, they really are frivolous. And at the end of the day, Love or hate the Affordable Care Act, the law still matters here. And I think this is likely to be laughed out of court. You can't write it off altogether, though. And when this judge issues his opinion, he's going to put some real force behind it and make it much more likely that we'll see some Republicans start to rally to it. When that starts to happen, who knows what might change in the conversation about the likelihood of this actually prevailing.
Nicholas Bagley, professor at the University of Michigan Law School, thank you so much for your insights.
Happy to be here. Thank you.